It's time for the George Williams Show on FM Talk 1065. George Williams, retired U.S. Marine Major, Vietnam veteran, retired federal agent, former vice chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, and world traveler, brings his wealth of information, sharing his thoughts on today's politics, and taking your calls and texts at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Hello, everyone out there in radio land. Welcome to the George Williams Show, and I am George Williams, your host, and I'm so glad and fortunate to be back behind the mic, and we're going to have a good show tonight, folks. We have two very interesting guests, and one is sitting right across from me, and I'll introduce him in a few moments. Our number here is 251-343-0106. And folks, if you're outside of our listening area, or if you know someone outside, they can hear us. We're all over the world on the internet at fmtalk1065.com. That's fmtalk1065.com. And I've got some of my friends in Brazil. I was stationed there for 7 years, and also in Africa. They're listening to this show as I speak, and as we will be speaking. So just sit back, relax. If you have any questions of our guests, feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106. All right, folks, my first special guest, and he is sitting right across from me, and I think a lot of people in Alabama know him. He's an Alabama native, and we're going to be talking about that during the course of this contest. And his name is Rear Admiral Kent Davis. And everybody should know him. I really mean that. He's an outstanding person. And he is the you have a vet recovery now?
Yeah. I've been the CEO there for about a year now.
Okay. Yeah, and amongst other positions, folks, and he'll tell you about that in a few moments. Admiral, welcome.
George, it's so great to be with you.
Great. Tell our audience something about, because you have a past that is unbelievable. Tell our audience something about your past, and let them know who Admiral Davis is.
Yeah, a lot of people know me from my military background, but in 30 years in the military, almost half of that was active duty and half was reserve. So I had a civilian career as well, and most of that time I spent as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I was in private practice with a big law firm in Atlanta with King & Spalding for a while. And then after 9/11, I got bitten by the bug to go back into national service, and I joined the then brand new U.S. Department of Homeland Security as an attorney, mm-hmm. and spent decades with them, mm-hmm. and finally retired from the Federal Civil Service as well as from the military.
Right. And then you're also involved in the state, the veterans.
Yeah. So for 5 years, I served as commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any better honor than serving our brothers and sisters who wore the uniform.
Right. Admiral, what is, we'll go into other details, but what are your concerns right now about what's happening in the world and even in the state of Alabama?
Yeah, well, it's a dangerous world right now. And, I listen to the news every night and I get a sense of deja vu. Mm-hmm. My first deployment way back in 1987 was on a battleship, and our mission was escorting tankers in and out of the Strait of Hormuz to keep the oil shipping lanes free. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar?
Yes.
That's what's going
sound
on right
very
now.
Familiar.
And I watch the news and think, wow, it's a lot more dangerous, I think, right now, especially with the drone technology and some mm-hmm. of the other high-tech weapons that mm-hmm. our sailors have to be worried about. We have a much smaller Navy now, too. We had almost 600 ships back in 1987. We have less than 300, I think, now.
Wow. Okay.
So it's a tougher mission with fewer assets to get it done. So I really feel for those sailors. I've also been watching the news lately about, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have followed the stories of the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln and some of the issues there. That was my second ship.
Wow.
And in 1993, I did a deployment to the Persian Gulf aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln. So I'm watching these stories again thinking, wow, history repeats itself.
Right.
Interesting, some of the stories coming out. I'm not sure if those sailors understood that they were signing up for the Navy. It's not exactly a pleasure cruise. But on the other hand, being in the business of mental health for veterans, I understand that we need to think about that and take care of those mental health needs of those sailors that are serving.
Right. Now, what does that consist of for you right now in your position in Alabama?
We still see a lot of issues with mental health in the veteran and the first responder community, too. We see similar issues, and you think about that, especially over the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. Gosh, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. I can't believe that.
Unbelievable.
But in the wars after 9/11, we sent a lot of people into combat zones,
okay. And
they were exposed to trauma. You see the same thing all the time with first responders. Mm-hmm. You think about what firefighters experience on the job.
I know.
And we're seeing that manifest itself in those invisible wounds that mm-hmm. we don't always talk about. It's especially problematic in Alabama, and it's a rare combination. We've tended to send a lot of people into combat arms, as we call it in the military, from mm-hmm. Alabama. We have a big National Guard, and our National Guard has contributed heavily over the last 25 years. Well, that leads to sometimes physical issues, chronic pain issues, mental health issues, and we're seeing the effects of that now. You combine that with the fact that historically we have not had a great mental health system in this state.
Right.
We've learned a lot of lessons from that as well. So it's mm-hmm. almost a perfect storm in the veteran and first responder community where we have chronic issues that we see and a system that's not always set up to handle those disproportionate issues in those communities. So it's a real issue that we face. At Vets Recover, we try to be one of the solutions. We're a relatively small nonprofit, a niche operation that aims at assisting our brothers and sisters in the veteran and first responder community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand exactly what you're saying, okay? Because, I'm a member of the VA.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And you know what I find? I find that a lot of the doctors, MDs, are retiring now because they've been involved for a long time, and they need to get more professional medical people.
Yeah, now I happen to be a defender of the federal VA. I've never worked for the federal VA. I'm a patient there, and I've got to say they took very good care of me. When I got back from Afghanistan, I got really sick. I've had two battles with cancer,
mm-hmm.
and the VA has taken very good, kind care of me.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, especially in older generations, people had concerns about the VA, but I really think they've gotten a lot better. And the federal laws have actually improved in the last few years, like the PACT Act, the promise to address comprehensive toxins. And we've dealt with things like Agent Orange exposure and burn pits.
Right, yeah. No, I'm not critical of the VA. I'm just saying some of the medical folks that I knew, they've retired.
Yeah. My primary care physician in the VA just retired,
right,
so I just got a new physician.
You just got a new?
Yeah.
But some of them are not medical doctors. They're physician assistants. Okay.
Yeah, and another problem we have in Alabama is the federal VA even admits that they can't hire enough mental health professionals.
Okay.
We are short on mental health professionals in Alabama in general, including mm-hmm. in the veteran community, and that's mm-hmm. tough. They have to do a lot of mental telehealth.
Right.
With doctors and therapists in California, say, to treat our veterans. That shouldn't be the case. They need to beef up their staffs and help those veterans.
Yeah. And the people are very nice at the VA.
They are.
You know, mm-hmm. If you go to Biloxi, that's the big one, you know, in our area.
For our area, yes.
And then Pensacola and then Mobile.
Yeah, and there's a clinic in Tillman's Corner.
Tillman's Corner, mm-hmm. yeah. That's a new one. I remember when they were building that, you know.
Yeah. And another asset, there's a place called the Vet Center here in Mobile, which is a counseling center. Very good, I think.
Right, yeah. And also for veterans, you know, a lot of veterans, they tend to try to get lawyers to help them out. And the VA, you have the DAV, you have the Veterans of Foreign War. They they help you out quite a bit also.
Yeah, I do say this. I'm an attorney, so I can say it. most veterans don't need to go to an attorney. You can go to a certified veteran service officer free of charge.
Free of charge.
And get help applying for benefits.
Right. All right, folks, we're with Admiral Ken Davis, and we'll be back after these messages.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, folks. And we are on a mission. You know, we are military men and federal law enforcement, retired employees, and we are on a mission. And I tell you, it's very important as to what we're doing and how we're trying to protect America, Admiral. And we welcome our special guest, Admiral Ken Davis.
Thanks, George.
It's very, very scary what's happening now in America.
It is. It's a dangerous world. And, you know, I've dealt with the foreign threat and mm-hmm. the domestic threat as well. So after 9/11, I joined then the brand new U.S. Department of Homeland Security. My first mm-hmm. big assignment, I was assigned to the new headquarters for Homeland Security, and I worked for the first secretary, Tom Ridge. Great guy.
Right.
Former Marine.
I guess
you're never a former Marine. What a great man. Just a great leader, I thought he was.
Right.
He was, I thought, the perfect pick as the first secretary of Homeland Security to bring together 22 separate agencies into this new entity. And it was scary back then. I worry about the surging threat now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it is connected with some of the international events as well.
Yeah.
And you have to think of both of those. So I've been on the military side and the law enforcement side as mm-hmm. well, worrying about national security. It's a dangerous world right now.
Very, very dangerous. And I can remember President Reagan when he would speak, and he talked about the future of America.
Yeah.
And he talked about the enemy from within.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what's happening.
Yeah, and going back to Tom Ridge, he used to say, when you think about the terrorist threat, which still exists,
right,
we have to be right every single time.
Mm-hmm.
A terrorist only has to get it right once, right from their perspective,
right,
to create chaos,
right,
and havoc in the country. And you got to salute those first responders that are just diligent and always meticulous in doing their jobs and keeping us safe.
Yeah, and the way they reacted during 9/11, I mean, they saw the building, they went on up there.
Yeah.
They went on up there. They didn't think about it. It's almost like being in combat, you know?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, and you think about what first responders see all the time, not just,
right,
you know, going into combat on deployment. You have to salute those that put on the uniform every day, not knowing what's going to happen on their shift.
That's true. And especially those of us in law enforcement, when I was a police officer in New Jersey, seeing what they used to do when you had a house fire, an apartment fire, you know, going right up there, you know,
absolutely,
get somebody out. And man, that takes guts.
Yeah, I purely by chance today, we hosted the fire chief from Saraland, Alabama at Vets Recover, and we were having that conversation about the trauma that firefighters sometimes see. We don't think about that a lot, about what they experience on their job, car accidents, fires,
right,
and the victims of those.
Right.
I don't care if you're the most hardened adult. That stuff starts to affect you after a
That's
while.
That's true. Very, very, very true.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do not give them the respect that they earn.
I think you're right, George. I think we do need to pause sometimes and think about those that put on the uniform, whether it's a military or first responder uniform. And mm-hmm. now, I think now is an opportune time for the nation to pause and think about those folks, because we just celebrated the 250th anniversary of the mm-hmm. United States. A great moment to pause and think about our liberties, the freedom, and the sacrifices of those founding fathers 250 years ago. Mm-hmm. But we're also just a few days away from the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks.
Unbelievable.
That is a time to pause and think about those first responders on that day and how they rushed into burning, collapsing buildings. And risk and sometimes gave their lives.
Yeah. I still believe that there were more folks who were killed than what they're saying. Because I remember we had the DEA, I was stationed in New York before 9/11, and there were thousands of people in those two buildings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the official account is just short of 3,000 people.
Yeah, you know, at one time they were saying between those two buildings there were over 50,000 people in those two buildings.
Yeah.
Stationed.
I had just been in the Pentagon a few days before the attack on the Pentagon, and I had a friend who were affected by the attacks on the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And we lost a soldier from South Alabama, Tamara Thurman, who was in the Pentagon, young Army soldier who was killed. And I think about her all the time on 9/11.
Yeah, and DEA lost some people. We had an
office
in there.
Absolutely.
We lost some of our people in that. Admiral, you were the commissioner for Veterans Affairs. And I know you had some with the former governor, and I don't think she was right in doing what she did. What is your opinion on that?
Well, I have to be careful because we're still in federal court over all of that. I obviously have a disagreement over how that was handled. Mm-hmm. It was one of those catch-22 situations where I was approached by the State Board of Veterans Affairs, who selected me for the position of Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. They approached me about some ethics concerns, and I consulted with legal counsel, and they told me you're obligated by law to turn that over to the Ethics Commission to have them take a look at it. Mm-hmm. So I did as the law required and suffered heavily for it, and I was removed from my position.
Yeah.
After a pretty successful 5-year run, as commissioner.
We were very concerned with that. You know, we veterans, very concerned with that because, you know, you did a great job in our opinion. And what happened to you should not have happened, especially Alabama, because with all the veterans in Alabama and the board had, you know, said we want to keep you.
And unanimously.
And we couldn't understand that.
We'll see how it all plays out in court. But I will say that I think the tragedy in all of this, and I mean this sincerely, I have my own political beliefs. When it comes to serving veterans, I try to be apolitical because I firmly believe that serving veterans should not be political. It should not be about Democrats and Republicans. Right. It should be the nation's and state's obligation to take care of those who have served their country. Mm-hmm. And for 80 years, the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs was apolitical by law, and now it's been politicized.
Right.
I don't think that's good.
Okay.
I think having a commission who serves at the whim of one person who's going to be influenced by politics, necessarily, that's just the nature of American business today. Mm-hmm. Politics enters into everything unless you explicitly exempt it from politics. And I see it already. Mm-hmm. I see political decisions being made that affect veterans, and it shouldn't be that way.
Right. Now, we're going to have a new governor.
Yep.
Okay, come January. And
that we know for sure.
We know for sure. and I think, you know, we all know that Senator Tuberville will be our governor. And he's a military. He loved the military.
His father served in the military.
Right.
Again, trying to be apolitical, I actually know both men who are running for governor from their times in office as senators.
Right.
And I got to tell you, I'm not one of these just because I disagree with someone politically. I think they're a bad person. I think both are good gentlemen. I really mean that. I've gotten to know them both. Talking about Tommy Tuberville, I've gotten to know Senator Tuberville. I have a high respect for him. One thing that I do respect about Senator Tuberville is he seems to care about veterans. His dad was a veteran, and he thinks outside the box when it comes to helping veterans.
Right.
He's very big at looking at alternative therapies to help veterans with needs, especially mental health needs. I've had conversations with him about things like hyperbaric oxygen chamber therapy for veterans and treating PTSD. That's good. Yesterday, there was an announcement by chance that the VA is going to start doing research into psychedelic drugs to treat mental health issues with veterans. I've always been a proponent of we need to think outside the box and come up with some innovative ways of research and treatment for veterans. As long as it's medically supervised, researched well, if there's scientific evidence that it helps veterans, I am all in favor of it. Last year, I wrote an op-ed piece in Alabama Daily News about reclassifying marijuana products and doing research at the VA into cannabinoids that might help veterans with both physical and mental health needs. So I'm glad to see when politicians are willing to open up to new ideas. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah, and I think he is going to do a really good job. First of all, you know, he got a lot of criticism for the holding up the promotions, you know, but that was for a good reason. You know, they wanted to have, you know, gays, okay? They wanted the money for them to be...
Actually, his big holdup of the general and admiral promotions was based on opposition to federal funding in the military of abortions. And personally, I think that is not only valid, but that's a noble thing. I don't think the military should be spending taxpayer dollars on that. Personally, that's my personal opinion. We can agree to disagree on, you know, was it correct to hold up military promotions to enforce that ideology? People will have varying opinions on that. I do think it's going to be good to have some new ideas come in January. I'm a big proponent of you need to turn over an elected officials and get new ideas.
I agree. We got about a half a minute, and then if you can hold on so after the break.
Absolutely, George.
We'll continue. And very interesting conversation, folks, we're having with Admiral Davis here. We'll be back after these messages, folks.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. We're here with our special guest, Admiral Kent Davis. And, you know, we appreciate him coming in and talking with us. And we're going to have him, we're going to have you back some more because.
No, thanks, George.
Okay, definitely. Now, you're from Montgomery.
I was born in Montgomery, Alabama. My mom was from a little town called Millry, Alabama. My dad was from Birmingham. I'm about as Alabamian as you can get.
Admiral, you know, this, I've been here for 20 years. I came back after being away for 50 years.
Okay.
And Montgomery, to me, under the leadership of the Democrats, it's pitiful, it's shameful.
There, George, there is. I go all over the state. In fact, I'm on the road tomorrow. I'm speaking at the Sons of the American Revolution in Montgomery tomorrow.
Okay.
I do get a sense around the state of what communities are doing well and which are not. Everybody talks about Huntsville. Mobile has got a good positive buzz. New mayor. Lots of good things going on with a new airport, a sense that Mobile has its act together. I don't get that sense with Montgomery lately. In Montgomery and around the rest of the state, and it's unfortunate. Montgomery's just gotten a rap of you're not headed in the right direction. Correct. Part of it is crime related. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just a sense that things look run down. There's not a sense of we're all one community in Montgomery, and there's a little bit of an inertia there that I detect. It's an attitude, a malaise that you pick up, both in Montgomery and around the state, and that's unfortunate. It's my hometown. I love the city.
You're right. And you know, Admiral, head of the Montgomery Regional for the minority Republicans, he's talked to me. He said, why don't you talk to Admiral Davis? We need a new mayor in Montgomery. We need somebody to run. And he mentioned your name.
You're probably talking about Cedric.
Yes.
Yeah, good guy. I've gotten to know him. Really good guy.
Right.
I've really been flattered, and I mean this sincerely. You know, I'm a native son of Alabama, and after military and Homeland Security service, I've been back here for 22 years now. Mm-hmm. It was really flattering last year when a lot of people approached me, political consultants and elected officials, asking if I'd be interested in running for office last year. Mm-hmm. I didn't for a couple of reasons. I thought strongly about it. You know, I think everybody thinks, my gosh, I could do better than some of the people that are in there now, frankly. But I was pretty ill. I was still battling stage 3 cancer. Right. I wanted to get completely well, and I finally got declared in remission at the end of 2025. So now I've had people approach me about 2027 and 2028, and I got to tell you, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Good, good.
Seriously thinking about it.
And I mean that. I really mean that because Montgomery is the showcase of the state.
It is.
And it has gone down under the Democratic Party leadership. I mean, it's a shame.
Well, it's amazing. For years, education was a big concern. I worked at Maxwell Air Force Base for a while, and we had trouble getting people to enroll in the education programs there because they didn't want to move to Montgomery.
Right.
Spouses especially said, I've heard horror stories about the education system.
Right.
Now it's largely crime, public safety. We hear a lot of that it's not safe.
Yeah, they're short a couple hundred police officers.
They are.
That's unbelievable.
And I will I'm a big, big proponent of boots on the ground when it comes to police force.
Right.
Back in 2016, 2017, I was a city manager in Anniston, Alabama, and I worked with the police chief there, and we had a huge crime problem in Anniston. Mm-hmm. And the police chief and I sat down and said, if we could just start with like a 10% increase in the police force, get more boots on the ground, you will see a decrease in crime. Mm-hmm. We convinced the city council, hired more police officers, put more beat cops on the street, and lo and behold, crime went down. We could track it statistically. Right.
I'm sure with the incoming governor,
Tuberville,
he is going to want somebody in as the mayor of Montgomery, the showcase city, who has guts and who's a no-nonsense person, and you need that. So,
well, I am a big proponent also of the broken windows philosophy. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe if you don't nip problems in the bud and even the appearance issues, if you don't take care of them, the fundamental issues, it's just going to get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a snowball effect because as the problems get worse and worse, you get into a vicious cycle of the reputation of the community goes down, economic development suffers. You've got to have the basics of public safety, education, having clean streets, that broken windows philosophy, focus on the basics, the things that people are immediately concerned about.
Right.
And I believe that the other stuff will get better as well. Economic development will come along with that. Just a sense in the community that we're moving in the right direction. I think you get that sense in Mobile right now.
Right, right.
And certainly in places like Huntsville.
Right. However, the Democrats, since they took over Jefferson County, since they took over Montgomery, they want Mobile and they want Huntsville. We fought like hell to keep them from getting those two cities. They want them. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, far be it for me to give advice to the Democratic Party, but their biggest problem right now is a national reputation of supporting socialism. True. Whether that's true or not, there is a perception out there that you have, frankly, a wacko element in the Democratic Party that's growing in influence.
Right.
That's not good for that party.
If
they think that's a winning formula, good luck with that.
And there are two elements then within the Democrat, and I could say this. There's a black wing and a white wing, okay? Doug Jones has the white wing.
In Alabama, that's true.
And, right. And Joe Reeves, the old-timer, he has the black wing. And they're fighting like heck. So we have to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's palpable in Montgomery, that those factions. It's really unfortunate that you see it break down along racial lines, but it's absolutely true. It's true.
So we need somebody in Montgomery, just like we need somebody in Alabama, meaning the governor, and the mayor, the incoming mayor of Montgomery. We need somebody with guts.
Well, listen, I try to stay away from politics, and especially racial politics, but almost my entire life I have lived in majority-minority cities.
Right.
New Orleans, Atlanta, Anniston, Alabama, where I was the city manager. Anniston, when I was there, I think was 51%, 52% black.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we tended to forge a biracial community that focused on, what do we have in common? Everybody's interested in better education and safe streets and economic prosperity. That's pretty easy. We can agree on that.
Yeah. Why under the Democratic leadership that doesn't happen? Look at all the cities, you know, under the Democratic leadership. First of all, they are proponents of, but cut the police department, the TONE and everything, you know, and it's just unbelievable. Without security, you know.
Let me give you a positive example.
Okay.
In a Democratic city. So believe it or not, I lived in San Francisco. I was actually stationed there in the Navy. And I saw over decades the beautiful city of San Francisco go into horrible decline to the point where it was dangerous to go downtown.
Yes.
Even to Union Square.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know why we can't seem to solve the homeless problem in this country.
True.
Some communities have dealt with it pretty good. Houston, Texas has a pretty decent track record. Humanely, constitutional principles. San Francisco declined. They learned their lesson, and they elected a fairly moderate Democrat recently. Mm-hmm. And things are up on the up and up in San Francisco now.
Okay.
If you look at the stories, statistics are getting better. Just the sense of the community is moving in a better direction.
Okay.
But they elected a moderate Democrat. Now, for San Francisco, that's probably the farthest right you're going to go.
That's tough. All right, Admiral, we're going to have to get out of here, and we have another guest going to be calling in, but we appreciate it, and we're going to have you on some more, definitely.
Thanks, George, and please say hello to your next guest. I'm a big fan. He's a good man, takes good care of veterans.
Right, definitely does. So, Admiral Ken Davis, we appreciate you coming, and we're going to have you on some more.
Thanks so much, George. All a real pleasure.
All right, thank you. All right, folks, that was Admiral Davis. He's an outstanding Alabamian, and hopefully we'll get him involved with politics pretty soon. We hope so, because our sister city, Montgomery, is hurting, folks. It really, really, really is hurting. And I don't know why, under the Democrat leadership, so many cities have gone south. I mean, crime. Take my city. I left here at the age of 10, and we went to Paterson, New Jersey. And that was a red city. That was a red state. And now in Paterson, New Jersey, the mayor is a Muslim mayor, and 5 days out of the 5 times out of the day, they have PA systems all over the city for the call of prayer. And you know, I was stationed in Nigeria, but covering 40 countries in Africa, And I got used to that in Lagos and in other Muslim, predominantly Muslim countries. And man, oh man, so that's my old city, Paterson, New Jersey, even though I was born right here in Mobile. But man, we need a change. We need a change. And folks, I'm telling you, you American citizens, we American citizens, we American-born citizens, we better change. We better look at this situation and not allow these folks who are born in other countries coming here to the state, and all of a sudden there are mayors, there are Congress folks. I'm a firm believer that if you want to be a congressman or a senator, you should be an American citizen. I believe that. I firmly believe that. Okay, and I believe that the census should be taken with only U.S. citizens, because the way they're doing it now. These illegals are coming into our country, and they're counting them. And as you know, the more citizens you have, the more congressional seats you have. And that is terrible, folks. That is terrible. And that's what happened in Paterson, New Jersey, and other cities, Newark, New Jersey. It's all over the place, and we've got to stop that. So I'm a proponent of not having Sharia law in America, because I've seen it, folks. I've seen it. And if you're a female, you should definitely go against Sharia law, because the females who live in those countries, they're treated like slaves. Slaves. And I've witnessed two stonings where they take the woman, put her in a hole, put something over her head, and they have people standing around them with rocks, throwing it at them. And some family members, they make them do that. That's under Sharia law, man. I'm telling you, folks, you don't want to see that. We'll be right back. And thanks, thank Admiral Davis for coming in.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back. And we are on a mission, and we still have the Admiral here, and we have our second guest. He's on the line, and let's talk. Let's listen to him right now, folks. Jerry, are you there?
Hey, George, how are you doing, buddy?
All right, folks, we're glad to have on the line Jerry Call, and he is going to be our congressional representative in the upcoming election in November for District 1. Welcome.
That's right, Republican nominee. That's
Republican
correct.
Nominee. That is good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We've had a busy day, and I just got home. I've been answering emails, and of course, we just had a major thunderstorm blow through here in West Mobile, so I'm glad to hear my generator running. It's always good to have a backup.
Yeah. Yeah. When I came over from Baldwin County, I as I was approaching and going over the Dolly Parton Bridge, the sky was black, completely black. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it really got rough out here. Not necessarily right at my house, but all around us it got real bad.
Right.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said that it hadn't rained at their house in about 3 weeks. It rained all around their house. I told them they need to put more money in the offering plate on Sunday. That was the problem.
I understand. How's the campaign? Who is your Democratic opponent?
Clyde Jones, he's kicked up a little bit of a dust storm, but you know, we're handling it. We're just we're running our campaign. We're focused on ourselves. We're focused on being positive. Okay. We're focused on our policy. You know, what we have done. We've got a record that we can actually run on. You know, people don't have to take our word for it. They can actually go back and see what we've actually done. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done a lot for the veteran community. We truly have. We worked hard to get what, when it came to the House, it was called a burn pit bill, mm-hmm. where we actually got folks that were actually exposed to the burn pits covered by the VA. Mm-hmm. And that took us about a year and a half to get that pushed through. It wasn't something that just happened overnight. We did, you know, we had several pay raises. One was a CR where we actually got a 2.5% pay raise on top of some other stuff. So, you know, the veteran community, we've really focused on in my 4 years in office. Mm-hmm. And I think most everyone in Congress is very veteran friendly. And I'm very proud of that. And we obviously have got some on the Democrat side that are not, that, okay. you know, they're anti-police, they're anti anything that, you know, Republicans are for. It's just the nature of the beast. So, but we can work around them. You know, I was on House Armed Service for 2 years, so I got to know my way around the military a little bit. Nothing like you, George. I think you've served in, what, three different branches of the military?
Three branches.
Three branches.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you should write a book about it. I wouldn't compare my little short stint in Washington to that, but the political side, I learned a lot about it, though, and that's important. That's what you want.
Right. What are some of your concerns with what's happening in Washington now that you're going to be working on once you get there in January?
Well, obviously, we've got to keep the border closed. I think what Trump has done is working. We've got to actually shore that up so it can't be changed back. There's a term that's used, and it's called, oh my gosh, my mind just went blank. There's a term it's called, we have to officially seal that, and we will do that with several of Trump's executive orders that he put in place. There's on quantify, mm-hmm. quantifies the term. Mm-hmm. And you'll see us vote on several things the last 2 years of him being in office, which will be the year I'm back in. But we've got to shore up so many things that he's done. The open border is one of them. We cannot afford another open border. You know, I went to the border. I saw what was happening during the Biden administration. We did all we could do to stop it. We did a little better job the last 2 years than we did the first 2 years, simply because we had control of the House. We're able to kill some stuff before it got out of the House. And that's important for this country. But the Democrat Party, I mean, they've just got these open border policies, and I do not understand it. I mean, they literally we would stand there with security, and these people were walking across the border where we were standing just like we weren't there. Mm-hmm. They didn't care because mm-hmm. they knew no one was going to stop them. So that's just one of many things we've got to get quantified for the president. Some of his tariffs will get. I'm very interested in looking at that. I know you're up from Bay Minette. The aluminum plant up there, we've got a pretty heavy tariff on aluminum that's coming in. I want to talk to the president, see if we can possibly do something on the tariffs on that aluminum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because they're already wanting to double the size of that plant, and they're not even finished with it. So those are, you know, some of the things that I want to jump on when we first get up there. But mm-hmm. it won't be popular votes. Not everything that we quantify will be popular to people, because some of that stuff being permanent will take away some of the things that we get. You know, what that'll be is too early to tell, but it'll affect everybody. And if we're going to ever get a balanced budget, if we're going to ever get in a situation where we can start paying the debt down, we got to quit spending. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way to quit spending is start cutting back.
Yeah, and that's what the Democrats don't want.
No, they've got so many social issues. You know, they want, and everyone wants to take care of the children. Everyone wants to take care of the elderly. But it's the young, strong bodies in between the children and the elderly that should be out working. They truly should be working. They should have a job. They should be positive in society, because being positive in society and doing and having a job and playing a role in trying to help the economy with their efforts, mm-hmm. I mean, it just adds a lot of self-worth and pride to themselves that we don't have mm-hmm. In so many communities.
Right.
So we've got to push those people out to work.
Right. A real big issue right now is the Mobile Bay and the bridge, the new bridge that they're going to be building. Will you be involved in that?
Yes, we've got, I talked to several folks over the last week or so. They're going to do a ribbon cutting in November. As you can tell, every time you come across the bay, you can see where they're already driving some test pilings. So that part has started. They claim that from the ribbon cutting, it's going to be 5 years. Last week, the bridge committee, which is in Montgomery, they squared away the financing on the majority of it. When I say the majority, I'm talking about $2 billion worth. They did come up with the tolls. We've been against tolls from the very beginning. We've yet to figure out a way to get around those tolls. I know there's a lot of folks that are anti-tolls. That's fine. We can not build it and not start, and we're going to be the same place in 10 years. But Barry Moore, I was at a function today, and Barry was actually talking as a senator about possibly working with Trump and trying to get money. I've been saying that for a couple of years, talking to Trump about getting that extra $1 billion for that project, mm-hmm. that bridge, because that bridge is a national security issue. It's not a convenience issue in my mind. It's a national security issue, because most folks don't realize that I-10 goes from Jacksonville, Florida, all the way to San Diego, California.
Right.
So for that tunnel to be disrupted in some way, whether it's flooded, whether it's a terrorist attack or whatever, I mean, it would take us going all the way around Cochrane Bridge and coming back through Bay Minette. I mean, you'd have to go as high as that.
Mm-hmm.
With traffic, and especially when you start moving troops and heavy equipment, it would really be a security issue. So I think that conversation with the president needs to be had.
Right. Now, also, you look up in Birmingham, and they have a route from Birmingham to Memphis. They built that, and no tow. So why are they having tows down here and not up in northern part of Alabama? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
You're talking about the six-lane, I call it six-lane, three lanes both ways,
right.
From Birmingham to,
yeah.
to the north part?
Yeah.
George, that was bits and pieces of projects that have worked through Congress for a while. It's not one big master project. It's over a several year period.
Okay.
This project, once you start it, you got to finish it.
Okay.
It's different.
All right. We're coming to the end of the show. We're going to have you on some more. Okay. Before the election, and we appreciate you coming on, because your election is very important. We got to have you.
Hoorah, Marine.
Got to have you. All right, folks. Jerry Call, who is a Republican candidate for the Congressional District number 1. And, Jerry, yes, we appreciate it.
Thank you, George.
All
Take
right.
Take care, buddy.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. And we also appreciate Admiral Davis for coming. And we're going to have him on some more, okay? This is not the last you've heard from him. So, folks, until the next time, as I always say, Vicon Deus, everyone.